You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, happy Saturday, and welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week podcast. I'm host and audio producer of the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, Steven Serta. After a busy start to free agency for the Kansas City Chiefs, this week was a lot quieter as we saw multiple Kansas City Chiefs sign in other places. This week on the Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week podcast, we'll start things off with Beach Season. They discuss the Chiefs' free agent fits, as well as their wide receiver issues and what they need to find at that position now that wide receiver Mecole Hardman and Juju Smith-Schuster have new homes. After that, we'll catch up with the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. They broke down all of the Chiefs that are leaving, all of the Chiefs that are coming to Kansas City, and all of the Chiefs that are staying in Kansas City. After that, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we get back, we'll wrap things up with the AP Draft Room discussing the Chiefs' highest priority needs ahead of the NFL Draft. That's all coming up on today's Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week.
I think that they want to get a dynamic playmaking guy on the outside, like a true number one type of wide receiver, but I think that they're also comfortable with, you know, expanding Sky Moore's role. Even him itself, if Sky Moore has his own YouTube documentary series, and in it, he said that he didn't know the playbook until week eight. Like, it took him till week eight to get the playbook down. And so a lot of the lack of utilization you saw early on from his own mouth was because he was still trying to get the playbook down. So next year, that shouldn't be an issue. But we'll move through these next two pretty quickly. Juan Thornhill, Michael Burton. Andy Reid loves a fullback. Juan Thornhill was never really quite the same after his ACL injury, in my opinion. Price, what's your thoughts, feelings on Thornhill and Burton no longer being Chiefs?
Yeah, well, I mean, Mike Burton can, you know, he can take a hike. He went to the Broncos, right? Like, what a clear legacy he had. The sausage and then the bratwurst, and he let it all go to be a Denver Bronco. Tragic. I don't know. We'll see if the Chiefs, they've carried a fullback for way too long. Feels like every year is this the year they just stop using it? We'll see. Who knows there? You know, Juan Thornhill was a little interesting. I think players like Juan Thornhill right now may not have a huge place left in the NFL. Nick Christensen was kind of turning me on to this for AP as well, that kind of the traditional free safety, deep center fielder thing is just something that's not really, really prevalent in the NFL right now because of how much too high teams are playing. You don't just have a guy who can't stop the run. You really need two guys who can come in and stuff the run and then also have the speed to go play deep or to cover the tight end or running back out of the backfield. So those aren't Juan Thornhill's strengths. His time in Kansas City was a little rocky. Obviously, no pun intended, they're rocky. But the issues with the ACL, and then there was that time that he just got flat-out benched for Dan Sorensen, despite all of us screaming for Juan Thornhill. I don't know. I think, again, glad he went and got his money. I don't necessarily think that it was something that the Chiefs had to bring back. And I think this says good things about Brian Cook. That's one thing that I'm optimistic here. I think that they feel very good about where they are with Brian Cook, especially looking at the other moves that they made later this week. Kind of points to it like, hey, Brian Cook is taking starter-level snaps on this team next year.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Brian Cook, especially if you want to talk about a guy who can come down and play the run, Brian Cook, his whole MO is that he's a bit of a thumper. He can play in the box. But they really like Justin Reid in the box too. I mean, they have guys that can kind of interchangeably, you know, be up play on the line of scrimmage or drop back and play deep. Brian Cook's got a nose for the ball. I like him a lot. Brian, what are your thoughts on Thornhill and Burton? You got a hurting over losing Burton?
I connected it pretty quick. You know, Burton spent time at the beginning of his career in New Orleans with Sean Payton, and I believe that that was probably a strong connection, that as soon as Payton gave him a call, gave him a better offer than Kansas City was ever going to, and it was over. Good for him. We'll see if they get a fullback. I don't think they'll do it unless they find someone they trust to play special teams full time. On Juan Thornhill, I think if Spagnuolo, if we could call up Steve right now and get him on the show, he would tell us that this safety group they're building is the most versatile maybe he's had since coming to Kansas City. And that's saying a lot because, you know, Matthew was here. But the thing is, Tyrann Mathieu, he was the instinctive ball hawk. And I'm not saying any of the guys on the roster currently are, but Justin Reed, Brian Cook, now Mike Edwards, they can all do a little bit of everything, and they can be trusted to run the alley. We heard you guys talking about the two high safeties. I mean, you need safeties. If you're going to play that shell, who can come down into that alley and tackle and not be afraid and not fail. And they have that now. And they also have guys who can match up with tight ends. No, none of those players, I wouldn't say, are Tyrann in terms of they're going to jump a route unexpectedly and grab a pick. But they're just a little more safe and they're a little more sound. And I'm excited to watch how that plays out. Good for Juan. He got a nice little deal. But I'm personally very happy about this. I think Brian Cook deserves his shot.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Stewart said that Juan Thornhill played scared in the run game. No, I'm joking. I'm not going to put that on you. He didn't actually say that. I'm inferring and reading between the lines. Okay, so we're going to play. So we're going to switch up a little bit here, and we're going to move on to Chiefs free agent signings and the new players that the Chiefs have signed. Okay, so Brian, Juwan Taylor, tell me what you like about him, tell me what you don't like about him, and tell me if he's an upgrade over what they lost.
He is an upgrade over what they lost, and that is right tackle or left tackle. It comes down to scheme fit, guys. This is a player who, no, he's not what I would call a good run blocker. I don't even know if he's average, but his feet are next level. His feet and the quickness that they possess is what got him paid $80 million, 60 guaranteed, to come play in Kansas City. Quite the opposite of what they had with Orlando Brown. And for some teams, you'd rather have Orlando, but for the Chiefs and what they do, Juwan is the better option. And now Andy Reid has somebody who, whether he's left tackle or right tackle, he can say, Juwan, I need you to block this one guy, whoever it is, for basically the entire game. And they can trust him to do a good job. Not saying he's going to shut that person out, but we saw last year, I mean, I've saw the number floating around. I don't know if it's PFF or if it's beyond that, but 16 pressures in 17 games, that is incredible for an offensive tackle who played in an offense with a good quarterback who threw the ball quite a bit. So I'm pumped about this. I don't know where he ends up. I don't know if he's left tackle or right tackle. Don't really care, because even if he ends up on the right side, like, he's going to face Max Crosby, Joey Bosa, so on and so forth. And that's worth $20 million a year if he can handle the job like he did last year.
I mean, I think 100%. I've seen him, some of his offseason workouts that he's been posting on social media also. He's clearly a much better athlete than Orlando Brown, you know, ever could be or ever will be. Price, what about you? Are you a Juwan man?
Yes, I was so on board once I saw he caught a 400-pound fish. Jesus, never swimming in the ocean again after seeing that monster. This had Brett Veatran all over it. I would like to take my small victory lap and say last week on this podcast, I said Juwan Taylor made a lot of sense for the Chiefs. So I will collect my receipts here. But the thing about Juwan Taylor is there is a clear path to continued ascension with him, whether he's on the right side or the left side. He got coached by a terrible coach, you know, 2 years ago. And then this year, his career really took off with Doug Peterson. He's going to get to take another step here in Kansas City with a great offensive line coach, great scheme. And yeah, I tend to agree with Brian. I think I would probably prefer him to stay on the right side because that's where we know he's good, right? right now I look at it, if you're a Chiefs fan, I think, yes, we think that the ceiling is higher for Juwan Taylor and he does things better that we like, a.k.a. pass protection. But I think at this point you're looking at it like a swap for a swap. You're moving one player from right tackle to left tackle. Orlando Brown played left tackle for 2 years for the Chiefs. I would say you probably have, in your mind, Orlando Brown level play at left tackle right now until proven otherwise. Which, guess what? If you did that and you didn't get tied up in a player that was unathletic and all the things that Orlando Brown was, I still consider that a win. Now, the Chiefs still have to solve the right side. But the thing that they gained here the most, I think, is not being talked about enough. They gained the flexibility of Juwan Taylor being willing to play right tackle. He said in his interview where he would go to the right side if he needed to. The Chiefs did not have that before. This gives the Chiefs the opportunity to put their best five on the field. If it's Anton Harrison at pick 31, a guy who's played left tackle most of his career, great. Juwan Taylor will go over there and not get, you know, not wag his foxtail in anger. You know, he won't stomp his Ugg boots on the way over there. I'm sorry. I'll stop with this fashion statements. But seriously,
he won't take off his fake glasses in anger and stare at you.
Look, man, I'm just saying, Juwan Taylor, like, there's a picture of him like shirtless and he's got abs. Okay, like this man, he's different, right? So it makes all the sense in the world. If Orlando Brown resigned for the same, like someone put this in perspective and they're exactly right. If Orlando Brown resigned in Kansas City for the same deal that he signed with the Bengals, we would all be pounding our chest right now and being like, hey, look at this great deal that Brett Veach did. A left tackle in the Super Bowl that gave up zero sacks in the postseason. So I don't think that there was a real winner or a loser here. I think the only thing is that the Chiefs gain that flexibility and that matters. And then there's a higher ceiling with Juwan Taylor.
100%. I think he's an ascending player. He's got the length, the size. He's got everything that Brett Veach and Andy Reid look for in an offensive tackle. I think that time will tell if he can make the switch. But I think, like you said, the thing that Veach wants to be able to do is go in with no holes and be able to draft best available. So if he can draft a right tackle, then Juwan Taylor's going to play left tackle. If he sees a left tackle on the board he likes, then Juwan Taylor's going to play right tackle. You know, and I think that that is great flexibility to have, like you mentioned. We're going to move on to the Chiefs' other kind of big-name signing that they had around the same time as Juwan Taylor, Charles Amenihu, edge rusher who was formerly with the San Francisco 49ers. You know, he's been a rotational guy for them, but from what I've seen of him on tape, he seems to be a guy who takes great lines to the quarterback, kind of plays relentless, got the size that you want, got the athleticism that you're looking for. Brian, what are the Chiefs getting in him?
I think they're getting their starting edge opposite of George Karloftis. And I know that some people would say, well, you could get better there. Maybe you can. I'm not sure. But that's what I think that he's going to be. And also, we know he has the ability to line up anywhere along the defensive line in a pass rush situation. So if it's third and nine, third and whatever, he can line up over the guard, the tackle, the center, and be an impactful player. And when you have another guy in Chris Jones who's capable of that, and you have another guy in Mike Dana who's capable of that, and Karloftis to a degree, you start to see the vision. It kind of reminds me of, to a lesser extent, what Spagnuolo had back in his Giants days. He had all those defensive linemen back in 2007 who were technically defensive ends, but they could line up anywhere and be effective. I think that's what he's trying to build here. We'll see if the results are as good as the idea, but make no mistake, they need to add. They need probably two more 53-man roster defensive linemen to be signed to this team. But it's a great start in a situation when they lost Frank Clark. So you got to get somebody. And I think Amenihu at this point in their career is a definite upgrade over the Shark.
Oh, I think he is too. I think that he has more juice at this point. You know, obviously the Shark has struggled with keeping weight on and with health and that sort of things. I think you made an excellent point that Brett Veach seems to be targeting guys that have either outside, inside versatility or inside, outside versatility. We saw George Karloftis line up on the inside. We saw Chris Jones line up on the outside. We're going to see the same thing out of Amenihu. I got to get used to saying that last name because I'm going to butcher it every single time. And I think you saw the same thing with Mike Dana. You saw Turk Wharton even line up on the outside sometimes. You know, they really want those guys that, given them the situation, that they can line them up anywhere on the line. Price, what about you, buddy? What's your feelings on this? Why do you like it? Why do you not like it? Hit me with it.
Well, similarly to Juwan Taylor, they're buying the flexibility here. I'm not necessarily sure that Amenihu's going to be able to line up on the edge and beat Rashawn Slater in a third and long passing situation with just speed. He does pass rush with a plan. Shout out to former Arrowhead Pride, Seth Kaiser. He talks a lot about pass rushing with a plan and watching players come off the ball and seeing what are they doing. Are they setting up players for later in the game? How are they using their hands, etc.? He does that more than like Karlaftis right now is kind of just straight bull rush and then hustle and effort. Amenihu's got a little bit more development there. However, I'm not sure he's athletic enough that he can just win straight up off the edge, like I said, against a good left tackle in a clear passing down situation. But you now have two players that can both kick out on the edge and the interior with Mike Dana. They've also done that with Karlaftis. They've also done that with Chris Jones. What I'm hoping is, seeing the Chiefs sniff around a little bit, I believe that they sent Joe Cullen to Georgia's Pro Day. I would love for them to consider the idea of like, hey, we've got plenty of big guys here. Let's go get someone who's totally out of our norm here. Let's sniff around Nolan Smith. Let's go sniff around BJ Ojulari, a guy who's got the bend and the speed, and give us something totally different on the pass rush side. And I think maybe, you know, picking up some breadcrumbs here, maybe Drew Tranquil is part of that as well too. Like, he's a pretty prolific blitzer. We know that they have Leo Chanel who can do similar-ish things. I would really like to see them start to utilize some speed off that edge a little bit more. So, this has Spags written all over it. The money seems to be fine. I hope that they're confident about his off-the-field situation. It doesn't seem to be something that they're incredibly worried about, so hopefully that's good. I like this deal. And again, look at the age, look at the ascension, look at the coaching. All these things add up, right? Was on a bad team, Houston, then went to the 49ers, the defensive line factory, and now the trajectory's there. So, again, Brett Veach's fingerprints all over this.
I think 100%. I agree with you on pretty much every single point. The off-field thing, I don't have the details on it. We don't have the details on it. Obviously, it's a serious situation, but you know that's why we have a court system. That's why the league office has protocols and they handle these situations. And so I think the Chiefs usually do their homework on these sort of things. They know what they're getting themselves into. Speaking of Drew Tranquil and Leo Chenal, I could see Leo Chenal transitioning to more of a pass rusher for the Chiefs, a guy who kind of goes north south and goes after the quarterback. Maybe they do like a three down lineman and then one standing edge rusher, something like that. But Brian, who is Drew Tranquil for Chiefs fans out there who don't know who he is? What type of player is he, and what are they getting with him?
I was shocked, quite frankly, when he signed. And it's because, yeah, you look at the linebacker room and it felt like it was as stacked as just about any other position on the team. There's not a clear, like, oh, hole, you know. The dime linebacker is where I would say Drew fits in. He's a pass coverage first guy who offers amazing blitz capability. So, like, when Spagnuolo wants to put six defensive backs on the field and have that one linebacker out there in Tranquil because it's third and eight, he can cover with the best of them, and he can also blitz with the best of them as far as a linebacker goes. So I assume that that's the plan, but I just think time's going to have to go by here for us to really see the whole picture, because I'm asking myself, why would Drew Tranquil, coming off of a career year, sign a deal for a team where it doesn't seem like he's going to play like starting snaps. It seems like he's going to be a supplemental role, special teams. That doesn't really add up to me. And that's why originally I started to worry, like, are they about to trade Willie Gay or what's going on here? And we'll see. But if they don't trade Willie Gay, they have the answer to every team they face, right? You mentioned Chenal. I think Chenal is great for teams like the Eagles in the Super Bowl, where you know you need to stop the run. Like, he can come in and set a tone, and he sure did. But then when you play the Bengals, a team who's destroyed them over the middle of the field, Drew Tranquil is a chess piece who can help them mitigate those problems that have popped up in the past where the linebackers have been exposed a little bit for being out of position. So I think that linebacker room is as good as any in the NFL. Like, no lie. I really feel that way. And we'll see if they hold it together. But as it stands, that's where I'm at.
I think I agree with you 100%. I think it is a little perilous for Willie Gay of all the players whose kind of like skill sets, you know, the way they line up, that he, I don't want to say the odd man out because I think the Chiefs really like him, just to kind of see what they're going to do with him in general. Price, what's your feelings on Drew Tranquil, Willie Gay, and how the Chiefs are going to manage those snaps?
Yeah, it's a little Brian Windhorst meme, right? Like, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Here's the thing. Willie Gay just doesn't really he doesn't have a clear defined role anymore. Drew Tranquil does that better than what Willie Gay does. And I mean, I'm actually very pleased with the Chiefs being willing to admit, like, hey, this is a Brett Veach guy. All these linebackers are Brett Veach guys. He could have easily gotten territorial and said, hey, no, we're not adding to my linebacker room. I've built this from the ground up, and look, it just helped win a Super Bowl. But yeah, Willie Gay, his athleticism, it pops from time to time. But more often than not, he leaves room to be desired in pass coverage. And then Nick Bolton is smart enough and intelligent enough and reads, you know, the ball downhill well enough to stay on the field for all three downs. You can't have Willie Gay do that. And then Leo Chanel is the hammer, right? Like, they're all tools. You've got, like, Leo Chanel's the hammer. You've got Nick Bolton, who's like the crescent wrench, right? Like, just old, dependable, reliable. And then, like, Willie Gay is now become an obsolete tool because Drew Tranquil does what he does better. So, yeah, it's very interesting. I don't think, you know, I've read the tea leaves and seen people say, oh, you know, Willie Gay to the Cardinals for DeAndre Hopkins and some picks. It's like, hey, they don't need another undersized linebacker. They've drafted two of those here recently. They don't need another one of those guys. But yeah, I mean, they needed the ability to walk away from Willie Gay anyways, because they should not be in the business of paying a part-time off-ball linebacker, right? So overall, I think it's a great move, especially whenever you realize, like, for some reason, I had in my head that Drew Tranquil was some old dude. No, this is his first deal after his, like, rookie contract. And reading the reaction of people who know the NFL football, just being like, gosh, Brett Veach does it again. All the confidence in the world that this was a great signing. So I really like it. And by all accord, by the way, seems to be a great, like, club, like, locker room guy as well. Just, like, watching some of the videos of him and stuff, just seems to be a really fun personality. So Chiefs defense got better.
Feeding the beast and getting you guys some information about how the Chiefs are attacking this offseason. We got shows throughout the week. And so we will keep it rolling today, John. And we start with the goings. Usually you would say comings and goings, but I think it's more relevant to start with the goings today. Orlando Brown Jr. leaving the Chiefs for, you got to say this, right? It's their biggest rival right now. I don't really consider the Chargers a rival right now. The Raiders, of course, are a rival, but they got to be a little bit better. The Broncos were miserable last year. So go to the Cincinnati Bengals of all teams. It does feel like an interesting storyline headed into what will be 2023.
Yeah, but I'm just not. I mean, it's interesting. But I think it's fair to say that they probably made a step forward because their offensive line was not very good. And for all that we have to say about Orlando Brown, which is viable and well earned, he's probably a step forward as their left tackle in 2023. So, you know, it's a situation that's probably played out well for both sides, for both teams this offseason. I think the Chiefs have made a step forward, but we'll get to that in a second. But yeah. I don't see this as being a thing that's going to make a big difference in the rivalry between these teams either.
I know what you're saying when it comes to maybe the impact on the team. I think it does make their line slightly better, but I mm-hmm. can guarantee you that, I mean, this adds to the storyline between the Bengals and the Chiefs. I mean, this is going to be a matchup when these two teams get together again one day down the road where people are going to be eyeing how is Orlando Brown Jr. doing. And I think obviously there'll be some chatter there. I think the key part of what it adds to the storyline and the WWE part of this is this Mike Garofalo tweet that I want to go back to from March 15th at 9:22 p.m. This is a deal for Brown to play left tackle. We knew about the left tackle obsession here in Kansas City. And then Garofalo continued. He was adamant he wanted to stay there. Bengals will allow him to do that and play with a contender that could face the Chiefs in the postseason. So this was very intentional that he wanted to possibly play Kansas City in a big time game. But in a way, I just question it because I know this is an expression, John, but it's like, dude, you played yourself. You had more money on the table, more security. Yeah. It's one of those cases where you bet on yourself and you ended up having the money dry up on you. And you had to take a deal that, look, what is it, $31 million in the first 2 years? That's pretty good, I think, as a consolation prize. But I got to imagine, John, if Brown could go back in time, he would have taken that deal that the Chiefs offered him last offseason.
You would think so. I mean, if what he really wanted was security, you'd think he'd want the longer contract. But I think this is a lesson for him to learn. And there was no other way for him to learn it than to actually go out there and put himself out on the market and see what happened as a result. And I think that that's why the Chiefs didn't tender him. I've said something similar right here on this podcast before. I think the Chiefs, you know, knew that they believed that he wasn't worth what he was asking. And there was just one way for him to know that, because he wasn't listening to them, you know, and that was to go out there and find out for himself. And guess what? He did. And, you know, wish him the best. I think he busted his butt in Kansas City. He just wasn't the guy that the Chiefs needed, at least not at the price he wanted to be paid. So,
yeah. And like, I guess if you're going to go anywhere, you take the Chiefs Bengals rivalry and budding rivalry out of it. You go to a top five quarterback in the NFL. It's a team that's on the rise. Sure. They're going to be a contender. And you try Gannon free agency. It looks like he'll have an opportunity to re-enter free agency in about 2-3 years here. It's unlikely he plays out the rest of that contract because of the way the numbers are involved. But yeah, I think he made a mistake. I think he liked it here in Kansas City. He had found a home. The Chiefs were willing to pay maybe even a little bit more than he was worth, as we found out in the open market. And kudos to Brett Veach for giving a smile and saying, hey, go test it, young man, and being right about it, right? So maybe it helps those type of situations in the future. A side story on this, Ian Rappaport this morning said the Bengals have had trade conversations centered around left tackle Jonah Williams. As the interest heats up in a player who has 47 career starts, Williams requested a trade following the signing of Brown, and since he has heard from several possible suitors. Well, Mr. Williams, if you want to play right tackle, why don't you come over to Kansas City? We have Juwan Taylor moving over to left, right? Let's keep this thing going when it comes
That's occurred to me that the Chiefs might end up going after him as a trade candidate to put him at right tackle. That's occurred to me. And what a story that would be for this rivalry. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think the way it stands now is you're going to have Juwan Taylor at left tackle, at least to start, unless there is something that happens prior to training camp, which could be a trade, a signing, et cetera. I mean, I don't anticipate another type of trade for a tackle. And then they'll try different combinations, see what's working. If they go and trade up and get a left tackle in the NFL draft, like in the first round, maybe they try him at left and one day at training camp. Maybe Taylor's at right. One thing that we see at training camp that maybe we're forgetting right now, John, is like, especially at the beginning, how many times do you see the tweets as you're working from the Arrowhead Pride Command Center? And I'm like, this person's at left tackle today. This person's working at right guard. They try a lot of different combinations. And I think maybe we're going to go into camp saying, oh, Taylor is the no doubt left tackle, regardless of, you know, who the personnel is. And then maybe we go up on a Monday and he's playing left. And then maybe we go up on another day and there's a different combination and he's at right. And the Chiefs are just in that process of figuring out, like, okay, what looks the best here? I think there's a lot of possibility going into camp. Ultimately, as it stands now, I think the battle is going to be at right tackle between a couple veterans and maybe a rookie that you get in the later rounds.
I agree. And I think that, the Chiefs are in better shape at tackle than people are probably willing to admit. Niang is a question mark for a lot of fans, but the Chiefs liked him enough to start him before he went through this string of injuries that he's had the last couple of seasons. So I think he's got a pretty strong case to be the right tackle coming into this season. And I don't think we should count out Prince Tegu-Wanogo. I really don't. The team has hung on to him for a couple of years, and he actually played in a lot of games last year, which is more than you can say for Darian Kennard, for example.
I think you're right. This is a key offseason for both Niang and Prince Tegu-Wanogo.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I even emphasizing the Niang point, you got to come to training camp strong and ready. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a golden opportunity situation. The Chiefs could draft, let's say they stay at 31 and then they end up taking best player available. And that isn't an offensive lineman. They are likely to take an offensive lineman in one of those day two picks mm-hmm. in this scenario. And that player may have an opportunity to battle for it, but that is, you know, if you're taking a player on day two, it's a, let's see what you got. It's not a, we're going to stamp you in and be a day mm-hmm. one starter. So that opens up a door for a golden opportunity for Niang. So he's healthy now. He was on the roster, right? He saw a handful mm-hmm. of snaps here and there. Now you come into camp, you're fully healthy, you're stronger. Team has liked you before. Maybe it's finally that year where Lucas Niang is able to break through, and then you have some of these other guys that are depth. But we have talked about offensive line enough. We're already into the 12th minute of the podcast, and we need to move on to something more exciting, like wide receivers and Juju Smith-Schuster. This was a little bit surprising to me, going to the New England Patriots on a 3-year deal. I know the team wanted him back. I know that they were optimistic about the idea of him maybe finding a way back to Kansas City, but I just think Juju Smith-Schuster, though he liked Kansas City, though he liked playing with Patrick Mahomes, turned to himself, turned to his family, likely talked to his agent and said to the agent, I got my ring. Let's go get that bag. And probably got the best offer from New England. The Chiefs weren't willing to match or pay more. And off he goes. And I think he was a good fit in Kansas City. I think Kansas City liked him, but they saw last year that we can lose a top two receiver and win the Super Bowl. We can lose a top 20 receiver and figure out a way. So that's where I think they landed.
Yeah, I agree. And this is one of those deals where in retrospect, it all seems obvious, but the Patriots were looking at every wide receiver on the market. I mean, every day, you know, like every hour, there was a new tweet from somewhere saying the Patriots are talking to such and such, and they're looking at such and such player. And they were all wide receivers. It was clear that they wanted to get a good one. And so what a surprise that Smith-Schuster gets a good contract offer from the Patriots that is more than the Chiefs were probably willing to pay. And so, again, thank you for your service, sir. You know, we appreciate what you did for us here in Kansas City. Enjoy that money that you're going to get from New England.
Juju's one of those players where it's going to be an answer to a trivia question 20 years from now. Like, who who had the most receiving yards for the Chiefs in their second Super Bowl win in that era? You're going to be like, who was the player? Because it was only there 1 year.
What was his name? JoJo something?
Yeah. So I wonder about this. Andy Reid is famously a player's coach and really leans into the idea of you can be whatever you want off the field. I'm sure he doesn't mm-hmm. love TikToks. I'm sure he doesn't love skits. But look, if that is what makes the player happy, that's what he enjoys coming to work and doing, you know, in his free time. I think Andy Reid's okay. He jokes about it. We saw the clip of him making fun of Smith-Schuster about how he moves faster in his TikTok dances. That's the hidden humor of Andy Reid that you get in some of those mic'd up. But I don't think Bill Belichick is exactly a let your personality show guy.
No,
and I do wonder about the fit. And then I also wonder, and this is just reality, it's like you're going from a Ferrari, as Lewis Riddick likes to say, to a beat up Prius in Mac Jones. And I just don't know if he's going to enjoy his time there. I mean, I could see it going awry. Who knows if he even plays out that contract, right? Like maybe there's a mutual parting. I just don't see the culture fit, and maybe I'm crazy there, but I do think that is going to be something that comes up in this relationship between Bill, who is a curmudgeon, and Juju, who's full of positive energy in life.
Well, I would just say that we shouldn't be too quick to discount this, because I could see how a receiver like Smith-Schuster could be very valuable in the New England offense. I completely agree that on a personality level, this looks like a disaster waiting to happen. Because you put it exactly right. He's a player with life and vigor and all of those things. And he may not fit very well into that culture, but on the field, he could actually make a difference in that New England offense, even catching passes from Mac Jones.
And here's the deal, though. TikTok dances are fine when you're on a 14-3 team. When your team is 8-9, yeah. And you go out in the week in Boston and you're doing a TikTok dance, I don't know about how those fans are going to necessarily react, but good luck to Juju anyway. I think the Patriots are in the slow incline, but just a huge question mark of whether or not Mac Jones is a capable quarterback. And John, that is the worst question to have when you're an NFL team. So it's unfortunate. Yeah. I wish Juju would have found a way to stay in Kansas City. But you do hope, I think, from afar, when the Pats are not playing the Chiefs, that it works out for him personally. Let's move on to Juan Thornhill. Speaking about a guy who surprised me a little bit, Juan chooses Cleveland. And not that I necessarily expected Juan to want to stay in Kansas City. I did think he was going to get paid. I thought it was very intentional by the Chiefs to select Brian Cook in the second round and find a way to pay less when they knew that Juan Thornhill, two-time Super Bowl champ who really came back into his own last year, was going to get paid. But this is a man that I thought enjoyed his time in Kansas City. And he is awfully excited to be heading to Cleveland, Ohio. And I think he's juiced up. He's someone that has a chip on his shoulder. And I think that for the Chiefs, they valued Thornhill, but it just was never a case where they were going to pay anything close to what he got in Cleveland.
Well, and I think it's pretty easy to see how he would feel the way he feels. You know, when he came back from injury, the Chiefs rather famously decided to put Daniel Sorensen on the field instead of Thornhill, who had looked spectacular as a rookie before his injury at the end of that season. And then, you know, to bring in Brian Cook, you know, clearly the heir apparent at your own position. I could see, or even Justin Reed, you know, the Chiefs, he might have had reason to take offense at the Chiefs not deciding he should be the guy take Tyrann Mathieu's role in the defense. So I guess I can see how he might feel undervalued by the Chiefs. I get that. But, you know, this is the reality of playing in the NFL. Teams are going to do what they need to do to cover their butts. And I think that's what all of those moves were. And if Thornhill wants to be, you know, pissed off about it, that's okay. I get it, but it's a business, and business moves on.
Yeah, I'm looking right now at the contract for Thornhill, and it's a 3-year, $21 million contract. And look, it was really creatively made. The cap hit is not so bad, but the fact is that you can just save money when players are on rookie deals. Mm-hmm. And Brian Cook is a player at the end of the year that was really coming into his own. And, you know, we'll see if he can, you know, grab the bull by the horns, grab this opportunity. And I think the Chiefs are buying into that. We'll talk about a role player safety that they signed to help fill that void in just a second here. We need to talk about, John, is running back Ronald Jones, who left for the Dallas Cowboys. I wrote this up yesterday. My feeling here is that Ronald Jones was originally signed by the Chiefs to be a contributor, but they just ended up getting Isaiah Pacheco and Jerick McKinnon later, and that made Ronald Jones a contingency plan where maybe he was supposed to be a contributor. And the positive for Dallas is I think he showed some juice in that Week 17 game. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah. Man, mm-hmm. Ronald Jones, he can still play a little bit. He's only 25 years old. He's a former 1,000-yard rusher for Tampa Bay, and he leaves Kansas City having touched the football in the regular season 18 times. So he's got fresh legs. Like, would you really be stunned if in that offense with Tony Pollard and now Ronald Jones is probably going to be that change of pace guy with Ezekiel Elliott gone, that he puts up numbers and Chiefs fans? You know, it reminds me a little bit of what I think we may see is – that preseason trade where the Chiefs flipped Carlos Hyde and he went on to Houston to be a 1,000-yard mm-hmm. rusher. Now, I don't think Ronald Jones is going to be an 1,000-yard rusher, especially with Tony Pollard. But like 600 rushing yards wouldn't surprise me next year. for Ronald
Right. Jones. And of course, the Chiefs are very likely to keep Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the backup to Pacheco. So that's going to be a storyline that people are going to monitor this season, is how much Jones gets in Dallas versus how much Edwards-Helaire gets in Kansas City, and then, you know, rate the transaction that way. But I think the Chiefs would rather keep Edwards-Helaire and as a backup who's been in the system for a while, assuming that they don't get some running back that they like in the draft. But it's interesting because this was an example of the Chiefs covering their butts going into the draft last year by bringing in Ronald Jones. So they had a guy that could serve in case they didn't get the player they wanted in the draft. And I think they wanted Pacheco in the draft, just didn't know if they could get him there in the seventh round. So they did. And Jones ended up being a guy who was, as you called it, a contingency plan. But more often than not, these players don't even make the final 53. I was amused yesterday when I read that Lonnie Johnson Jr. was being signed elsewhere when I was working on our free agency tracker. And I thought, wait a minute, he was with the Chiefs last year. And he was, he was signed as a roster filling guy. So the Chiefs would be able to go best player available in the draft. And he didn't make the final 53. And now he's, you know, signed a contract to be a player somewhere else. So it was kind of an unusual situation that Jones actually made the 53, because normally they don't. And when the Chiefs make a move like that,
he was not on my projection to make the final 53. I watched him that final day of training camp, and it was really with the third and fourth team. There were moments when you're like, there's no way Ronald Jones makes this team. They're not going to want to keep. He requested his release in October. The Chiefs didn't grant it, and they wanted him just in case, you know, they were injured at that position, and he kind of got stuck for a year, but maybe this will be good for him. Rested legs for a year as a running back is not a bad thing, especially when you're still only 25 years old. So I just wonder if there is a resurgence in store for good old Ron, who was with the Chiefs and got his ring, but probably didn't enjoy most of his time here, and I can't necessarily blame him for that. All right, sure. So we have gone through, John, the goings. Mm-hmm. Orlando Brown to the Bengals. Juju Smith-Schuster to the New England Patriots. Juan Thornhill to the Cleveland Browns. Ronald Jones goes to the Dallas Cowboys. Now we're going to get into the comings since we last chatted with you guys. And we'll start with Drew Tranquil, linebacker now for the LA Chargers. We had joked, John, that we were looking forward to St. Patrick's Day, mainly me. And what happened on St. Patrick's Day, as I was trying to enjoy some time with my friends, was 14 moves on St. Patrick's Day. And Drew Tranquil was one of them. And he comes in. He's a 27-year-old linebacker. He actually led the Los Angeles Chargers in tackles last year, right? Mm-hmm. I know that tackles aren't everything. We learned that as people complained here and there about Nick Bolton last year, about the value of him, as he's just this tackle machine that finishes second in the NFL. But he had 146 tackles, 95 solo tackles last year for LA. I do like when you dip into the division waters, because there's a little bit of a swing factor there. You do have to play this team twice a year. We had Nate Christensen, one of our good film analysts, review Tranquil, and I'll read his synopsis here. These are Nate's words. If I had to guess Tranquil's role in the Chiefs, I would suggest he takes linebacker Darius Harris's role, which means a one or two series a game behind linebacker Willie Gay Jr., while also handling dime linebacker responsibilities. Gay is a better player than Tranquil, but the Chiefs haven't been willing to task him with 100% of the snap workload. They like to rotate another linebacker in for a few series here and there. Unlike Harris, Tranquil can provide some of the coverage ability and range Gay delivers, so the drop-off in play should be more slim than it was with Harris. As a dime linebacker, Tranquil can be fun. He's by far the best coverage linebacker the Chiefs have had in the Steve Spagnuolo era, and Nate goes on to say that he'd argue he's the best blitzer at linebacker that the Chiefs have had. If he can pick up the playbook quickly, Tranquil can make an impact as the dime linebacker that the Chiefs haven't had throughout the tenure of Spagnuolo as a defensive coordinator. So this is clearly a value signing for Kansas City. And I know this was a storyline midseason, John, about the Chiefs and why they continued to play Harris over Gay. And there had to be a very clear reason about that. You don't know maybe if it was some of the assignment problems, maybe Gay wasn't retaining something that Steve Spagnuolo wanted him to retain, and maybe it wasn't as fast as he wanted. They really liked Darius Harris when Willie Gay Jr. was out for the suspension, but he did seem to be at times a little bit of a liability in coverage. So when you talk about being a good coverage linebacker and being a good blitzer, of course Steve Spagnuolo is going to be interested. And you get this guy 27 years old, and you take him from one division team and you put him on another.
You know, we always like to talk about complementary players at running back and at wide receiver. You know, you've got a guy who can be the third down guy or can be the receiver or the pass protector, or, you know, wideouts that have that can be really good on the field together. Like Travis Kelce is a good complement with Juju Smith-Schuster, as we heard last year. Well, the same thing applies here. You want to have linebackers that you can use in different kind of situations, because that's the way the Chiefs defense operates, with all these sub packages that they dream up, and they put the guys out there in specific situations where they think they'll work the best. So I totally get why the Chiefs would want to have a linebacker just like Drew Tranquil. So I think this is an excellent signing by the Chiefs.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
How do you feel about the Mike Edwards move? He's the safety again. It's a position that we all knew they needed to add to. I think no one was kidding themselves. They needed another safety that could actually play. You know, they use three safeties quite a bit. You know, not as much as they used to maybe before they got the cornerback group they have now. But, you know, what do you feel about how it, I guess, impacts maybe Justin Reed, Brian Cook? You know, do you think he plays over Brian Cook? What do you think about Mike Edwards?
Yeah. You know, I haven't watched a ton of Mike Edwards, but I think it's pretty clear that it's a one-to-one Juan Thornhill, a one-to-one replacement, if you will.
Ah, nice.
That, you know, Thornhill leaves, he gets a nice contract, at least on the surface, with Cleveland. And, you know, he was somebody who had a lot of promise, but maybe didn't pan out exactly how they had hoped. Still a good player, still fit an important role. I do think that they're excited about Brian Cook, and I think he's somebody that's penciled in as a starter at this point. And I think Edwards is that third safety that can play a little bit of that, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a robber role, you want to call it whatever. He's a guy that's out there forcing turnovers. And again, What's the thing that we said that was the weakness of this defense in the secondary last year? They finally had corners that can cover, but they weren't turning the ball over enough. And so you, what do? You bring in the guy that has the most pick sixes in the NFL over the last 3 years. So it works out. It works out again, I think, as at least theoretically an upgrade and a really good fit in that third safety role.
Nice stat pull. I did not know that one. But it makes sense. He's around the ball quite a bit, and he actually does model his game. He's modeled his game his entire life after Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. And honestly, when you watch him, it is kind of, he has that, you know, quick reaction to get downhill. You know, he flies to the run game, even though he's small. That's the thing though, I've kind of thought about this in terms of how it impacts Justin Reed. When you think about how the defense was formed last year, Juan Thornhill was the primary deep safety when the two safeties rotated one down, one up. But Justin Reed was kind of always a free safety in his career before he came to Kansas City. I think his bigger size, maybe they wanted him more as a, and I think he played well as a strong safety as the season went on. But could this maybe they kind of want him to go back to that role? Because I feel like Brian Cook and Mike Edwards are both more strong safety types. I could be wrong though. Edwards is playing a lot of free safety for Tampa Bay. I just think that was out of necessity. I think he is more of a, you know, I mentioned he's like Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu wasn't a free safety. So I do think it's kind of interesting in that way, because, you know, I think Justin Reed, you know, he was pretty good on tight ends last year. He was good at coming up into the box towards the end of the year. I think I had some concerns with him as the season was kind of first going. But towards the end, he definitely stepped up as a guy filling in, yeah, coming down and stuff. So I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, just I think the goal is for them all to be able to play all the positions, right? The goal of this defense is to be unpredictable and multiple and all of that stuff. And I think, you know, this gives them options. I don't think by any means do we have to slot any one of them as a free safety, strong safety, you know, left side cornerback, right side cornerback. They're just going to be able to mix and match. And you know, I really hope that they extend L'Jarius Sneed, and then you end up with this kind of conglomerate of a defense that can do a lot of different things and force a lot of turnovers and make some big plays. I think that's a very good thing.
Yeah, no, you mentioned turnovers. Yeah, I mean, the safety position was definitely not doing that as much as it could last year. We're used to, right, with Tyrann Mathieu, you know, for a few years. So definitely good to have maybe a Tyrann Mathieu light in the mix, sure, and Mike Edwards. All right, well, you know, those are the two external signings, right? You know, some fun names, but the re-signings are maybe not as fun of re-signings. They're just kind of, you know, maybe a little stale in terms of bringing Derek Nnadi and Nick Allegretti back. First of all, I will say, you know, they needed depth into your offensive line. Definitely Nick Allegretti makes sense, so I'm glad they were able to work something out there. Derek Nnadi, on the other hand, I was definitely expecting him to just not be back, honestly. I really honestly thought he didn't play well enough last year to earn, even if it was the deal he got, which is 1 year, very minimal kind of contract. I just kind of figured, all right, you can find that somewhere else. You can try someone else at that spot, but he's back. I don't know. How do you feel about Derek Nnadi being re-signed and what that could possibly mean for the defense, or what it should mean maybe for the defense? What do you think?
Yeah, he certainly didn't have his best year of his career this last season. He's been a solid player in his Chiefs tenure. And of course he had made a couple plays down the playoff run where it gave you a little bit of hope. You know, I thought he was going to go elsewhere as well, but clearly didn't see a market, you know, came back on a cheap 1 year contract. And really, there's no such thing as a bad 1 year contract. I know others have said that. Mm-hmm. There's definitely no such thing as a bad, you know,
right,
vested salary benefit minimum, you know, veteran minimum contract. You know, worst case scenario, you at least have a body there to fill out the depth chart so that you don't go into the draft desperate to draft a nose tackle. And you can say, if we had to line up tomorrow and play a game and your nose tackles were Derek Nnadi and Danny Shelton, all right, they could play a game tomorrow if they had to, right? Like, without signing Derek Nnadi, I don't know that you could say that. So
yeah,
you've at least got that floor. You've at least got somebody in that spot. And I do hope that they seek to upgrade that throughout the draft. But at least for now, having him there is fine. Nick Allegretti, I think, is another guy we thought would get paid elsewhere. He could be a starter somewhere. But happily surprised to see him back. I think that really rounds out your interior offensive line group. There's really no room to draft another guy there unless they give up on last year's draft pick in Darren Kennard. So I think you got to say that the interior offensive line is as set as any position on this team with Allegretti coming back.
Well, you talk about, you know, getting that nose tackle so you're kind of short up before the draft. You don't necessarily need one. Do you – and I think I know the answer to this, but how do you know – do you have that feeling about the receiver room? And that's where we can kind of talk about the receivers, because that's the one position right now where it's like we're just kind of all sitting around waiting for them to make some sort of move, some sort of addition. You know, there's so many names being floated out there, and we're kind of down to only a few of them now because it's been a long process where people are getting picked off. So, I don't know. What do you feel about, first of all, the two names that are left, right, are Odell Beckham Jr., obviously, and DeAndre Hopkins, you know, in a trade. With the depth chart as it is right now, which is Kadarius Toney, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Sky Moore, and then a combination of something called a Ty Freifogel, Justin Ross, John Ross, Amir Smith-Marset, and Cornell Powell.
Man, you're just making stuff up now. There's not really somebody named Freifogel.
You caught me. You caught me. I was a made-up name. No, it actually wasn't. That is a real person, everybody. So with all that said, I mean, do you feel like it needs to be done a receiver before the draft, or what do you think about the receiver position?
No, I think Brett Veach has been pretty consistent since Patrick Mahomes was drafted and saying that they're going to be relentless about bringing in weapons for Mahomes. And there's a lot of reports flying around, a lot of them conflicting. I question the motive behind some of these reports. You know, the big report that came out that said the Chiefs were happy with their receiver group and they were going to bring back Juju and run it back with the same receivers, maybe even McColl. You know, clearly there wasn't a lot of interest in doing that, as both of those guys signed contracts that the Chiefs could have easily matched or beat if they wanted to. Tells me something else is cooking. I think the interest in both Nuke Hopkins and Odell Beckham, I think the interest is legitimate in both of them. I'm sure that there's a price where they've said, we're not going to cross this line, whatever that line may be. And I do think that a lot of the media reports, even today as we record on Thursday, a lot of those reports coming out saying, oh, the Jets are the front runners, the Bills are the front runners. That's the one that really gets me. It makes me really feel like it's a leverage play or a smokescreen when you go and put the Chiefs' main contender or one of the Chiefs' main contenders out there and say that they're interested or that they're the front runners for this player. Really makes me feel like somebody, agent otherwise, is out there trying to drum up a market, trying to leverage one team against another, trying to, you know, get somebody to budge off their deal. When Odell Beckham tweeted out, I don't know where everybody got this $20 million deal, but right, it's got to be more than four. I would almost bet money that the Chiefs were the four that he's talking about, and that they probably had some incentive laden deal to say, hey, you know, it's four, but it can be worth up to whatever 10, you know, if he hits certain marks, and he didn't take kindly to that. So I think there's been conversations. I think there's interest there. I think they will add to the receiver room before the draft, and they will also draft a receiver. I think they're just, this room is going to be dramatically different, come training camp than it is right now.
All right, well, it's debate time then. Let's debate here, because I know you are going to oppose me here. But if you had to pick one or the other for them to bring in and be a part of the Chiefs receiving core, lead, you know, obviously be the number one, immediately. You know, for me, I would say Odell Beckham Jr. would be my preferred target. You know, I think both of them are a similar age, so I don't think you can necessarily give one or the other that, like, oh, he's too old or whatever. So with me, the injury thing is obviously a thing, but I just feel like his ability to create separation is a little better than DeAndre Hopkins. His ability to, you know, he can be your X receiver on the line, you know, kind of, you know, beat press coverage, but he can also be your slot receiver, you know, win on kind of quicker stuff. He can be a deep threat, although, you know, hey, you can argue that his you know, speed's probably diminished by now. I just think DeAndre is a little, you know, especially at you know, where he's at, you know, in his career. They're both at the same points, but I just think, again, Odell's just a little more versatile in what he can do. So what do you think? Do you disagree with me?
So the upside to Odell is that he's a free agent, so you don't have to spend a draft pick to get him or trade other assets. And all other things equal, he's probably going to be cheaper than Hopkins would be in the grand scheme of things. Beckham had a case to be one of the best receivers in the league a couple of years back, and he's been, you know, off the field. You missed all of last year, right? And has has the torn ACL last year, and so he's a player that I don't think you really know what you're going to get with him. I don't know how many games I'm going to get out of him. I don't know what you're getting personality wise with him. He's a different cat. I don't know what that means for the for his ability to stay on the field, his ability to, you know, kind of mesh with the team. I'm sure he's fine as a teammate. I think he just has a big, interesting personality. But I just don't know that he's a multi-year guy. I think the Chiefs probably see him as a one-year rental, and he probably sees himself as a top receiver who's just been out of the game for a little bit and is ready to sign a next big deal. So that may be part of the impasse, I would wonder. But I like the idea of signing a street free agent as opposed to trading for somebody, all else equal. But I do think Hopkins brings a different element to this game, and a receiver, I mean, Beckham can do a little bit of this too, but a guy that can absolutely go up and get it and in a way that the Chiefs have not in my memory had a player like that. Like, you know, Tyreek Hill for his size could make plays on a jump ball here and there, but he also failed on a handful of those. I feel like Hopkins gives you a different element down the field in contested catches, that sort of thing, that takes the Juju Smith-Schuster role and takes it to the next level. And I think he's more of a reliable player, although I know the last 2 years he's missed substantial time as well. But, you know, if you're comfortable with where he is medically and where he is, you know, physically, I think he has the potential to be back amongst the league elites before Odell Beckham could.
Yeah, hey, that's the thing. I mean, you're not going to go wrong with taking a swing on either of them. They're both great receivers. The thing is, if you do want to believe the reports that have come out today, it sounds like Aaron Wilson straight up tweeted that the Chiefs were never truly in on DeAndre Hopkins. But, you know, again, we've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of different reports conflicting, obviously. Odell Beckham, it sounds like, you know, the Jets are kind of closing on a deal with him potentially again. You know, we've heard some things like that before. So if we live in a world where neither of them become Chiefs, in a sad kind of, you know, not as fun world, are there any names out there that would interest you? I you know, besides re-signing Justin Watson, we haven't talked about that yet, but I do think,
I mean, that's,
I think that's kind of an easy move, right? I think it's an easy move. So I don't know, is there anyone else out there that just maybe piques your interest just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say your heart wants Odell Beckham, your heart wants Nuke. Your head may say that there's others that are more logical and more realistic. Those are the two guys that, you know, that would be, like you said, exciting options. I think a realistic option, somebody who really does fit the MO for the Chiefs and free agency, would be DJ Chark. Yes. He's a younger player. He's had good production. He's played with some bad teams and bad quarterbacks, but the upside's there. He's also had health issues. You know, I think you've got to check medicals there, but, you know, he's somebody that is at a point in his career where you could sign him to a multi-year deal and feel like you've got, he's got good years ahead of him. He's 26 years old. He's been in the league 5 years now. You know, there's a decent chance that he's got another 1,000-yard, you know, 1,000-yard season in him, or two or three, you know, if he's in the right system and he stays healthy. So that's somebody that I could see. That's the only remaining name other than those top two guys that I could see a significant investment in. Everybody else is just a prayer at this point, right? It's a, you know, Kenny Galladay and a Marvin Jones. Like, can you get something out of those guys? Maybe. But, you know, if you want somebody who's actually going to elevate the room, it's Odell, Nuke, and maybe Chark.
Yeah, I would agree with you. DJ Chark is definitely the most exciting receiver on the market besides the two we talked about. And if you look back at his combine, which I'm looking at right now, you know, he ran a 4.3 440 at 6'3", 200 pounds, had a 40 inch vertical jump, 129 inch broad jump, which is the 89th percentile for receivers. That's the kind of guy that Veach probably liked in the draft, you know, and probably, you know, obviously, you know, hasn't gotten his chance to get on him yet. Although last year they had a chance to get him. He was a free agent last year.
Yeah.
He signed very cheap in Detroit, which kind of blew a lot of people away. A lot of people thought he would maybe get a good deal. So maybe Veach will correct it this time, bring him in. Cause I do think you're right. I think he's the one guy left that you could argue is a legitimate, you know, upgrade and kind of, you know, actually does elevate your room to a point where you feel better about it, a lot better about it going into the draft.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.